My name is John Bishop. My career to date has involved regular conversations with head teachers and senior school leaders. This is now my 20th year of doing this, and I've learned so much during this time. In fact, I've been able to build several successful educational businesses based on these professional and sometimes personal conversations with head teachers. I often share the wisdom gained from these discussions with colleagues including managers, business partners, health mentors, and other school leaders. As a result, many introductions and connections have been made that have led to exciting and successful collaborations. Now I think it's time that these conversations are shared with a much wider audience. This podcast series consists of interviews with former, current, or future head teachers. Some of these I've known for a long time, whilst others I met for the first time whilst recording their interview. So who should listen to these conversations? Head teachers, who would like new ideas from colleagues who've experienced similar challenges to themselves. Aspiring head teachers who can learn from colleagues who have gone before them in the role. Teachers who want to better understand the pressures experienced by their leaders and managers. Policymakers who may benefit from what's really happening on the front line. And anyone who wants to get inside the minds of school leaders who play such an important role in our society today. All guests have been chosen based on an individual theme which will be shared during their introduction. These themes are of particular relevance to my current work projects of well-being, mentoring and staff culture within education. During the interviews, we also get to know the person behind the role. What made them choose teaching as a career? Are there any key moments or turning points during their career that are responsible for their success? How do they switch off from such a demanding and all-consuming vocation? The podcasts are generally between 60 and 90 minutes long and are perfect for you to listen to whilst commuting to and from work, or whilst walking the dog at the weekend. I hope that you enjoy these interviews and feel free to share any thoughts or follow-up questions on the website or Twitter to keep these conversations going. I first met Kath Rindle at an indoor futsal centre that had just opened in Birmingham. Her first words to me were along the lines of, "I know all about Evolve, but I don't need a health mentor right now, thanks." Fast forward a few weeks and I joined the governing body at Benton Community School where Kath was head at the time. I'm still supporting the school in this role, where I'm currently chair of the Finance and Staffing Committee. The reason I decided to join the school as a governor was because I really liked Kath's vision for the school and her educational philosophy. Kath is a strong advocate for a creative curriculum and a firm believer in the benefits of physical education in school sport. In fact, Kath was the first head teacher I had met who had employed a qualified PE teacher to lead this key subject area within a primary school. Kath is definitely one of the inspirations behind this podcast series. We always have engaging and creative conversations about what we can do to better meet the needs of children in school and beyond. Kath's innovative thinking and perseverance to find solutions for every child are characteristics that I like to think I possess as well. This interview is under an hour long, so will be a nice accompaniment to a weekend 10K, a spell of sunbathing whilst on break from school, or whilst doing the weekly household chores. Without further ado, I will leave you in the experienced, capable, determined, successful, and giving hands of Kath Rindle. So, Kath, hi.
Hi.
Now, we know each other because I was one of your governors at Benton School, and now you're head teacher at Nanson School. So, can you tell me a little bit about the school?
Nanson Primary School is one of the largest in Birmingham. We have over 963 children, and we are situated in Alum Rock, which is a little place, forgotten little place really, of Birmingham, this is a school that is a very typical inner city school. We have predominantly Pakistani children, but with an increasing group of Romanian children have joined us. We are heavily oversubscribed, and we are a school that has changed a lot. It's had a very turbulent past, this school has. It's famous, I suppose, which is the wrong word, infamous, for being part of the five schools at the centre of the Trojan Horse incident that happened in Birmingham. It's got caught up in it all, I think, to be honest. And I'm its first permanent head teacher in about 5 years. And it's a school that had lost its way a little. wasn't, when you walked around, it didn't feel like a primary school. The children didn't act as though they were in a primary school. It's very much, teachers sat at the front and children sat in desks in front of them. They wore little blazers, black blazers they all had. There were very few displays on the wall. It was a feeling of a school that had sort of almost been forgotten or had been left behind. We joke a little bit and say it was a bit like the 1950s here. But I think it was just the style of education that was being taught was very narrow and very focused on English and maths.
And why do you think it was a school that was forgotten?
I think because it was part of Parkview Trust that had two secondary schools and one primary school, and what they did was they looked at the secondary practices and put that into the primary school. And made the three schools very similar. This being a very large school, you would think timetabling wise and things that it would work then on the secondary model. But what was lost from here was the flexibility, the creativity, the bit where in a primary school you join up with two classes or you change the timetable round, and that what had stopped here was the music and art, drama, and PE was very restricted. So those sides, that creative side of the curriculum, had just about vanished from here.
And the school's gone through quite a significant transformation in terms of its performance since you joined. So can you just talk us through that?
Yeah, I came here, I answered the call, I suppose, is the best way. So we've obviously known each other through Benson Community School, and while I was the head teacher there, part of the role was to go out and help support other schools in Birmingham. I have to say, it's one of the best parts about it, about going out, supporting other schools, coming back and bringing ideas back to your home school. And I came to Nanson to help out. It was for a term. I remember telling the governors it was only for a term. And I came and did the fourth monitoring visit here with two other head teachers. And one of the head teachers that was here at the time said to me, You'll love the children here. There's a bug. He says, you'll catch the bug. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'm happy with my other school. But he was right. There's something about the children here. They definitely need somebody to give them a voice. That's what they needed. They needed somebody who would stay, I think. They needed a consistent approach. And they needed somebody who believed in them and would stand up for them. And I think I kind of quickly became that person for them. So I then stayed in September, 4 days a week here at Nanson. And I took them through to the final Ofsted. And we did very, very well. Well, I was the only, I must admit, in the September, I was the one going around saying, we will get good, we can get good. And convinced everybody in that autumn term and the fifth monitoring visit that good was achievable. And then when the Ofsted came in the March of 2016, we got good across the board, which was fantastic and thoroughly deserved. And it's the highest result in Ofsted since Ofsted started that this school's ever got. This was always a satisfactory or requires improvement school or a special measure school. So I'm very proud of the fact that we are now, we can hold our head up high with everybody else. And we're actually it's a little bit like being a phoenix, being reborn. We're going to become a force to be reckoned with, I think, in Birmingham, because we're now able to stand up there and say, look, this is what we're good at, this is what we can do, and we're proud of being at Nanson.
Excellent. And you've talked about the curriculum and the input you've had there and broadening the curriculum to include more of the art and physical education, but what are the cultural changes have you noticed since you joined?
We changed the school uniform and we became became the family of Nanson. It was very dysfunctional. There was no real pride in being at the school. So we've changed it into, we're now, Nanson is one of the things that he's famous for doing is being an explorer. So we are all now Nanson Explorers. So you belong to the family of Nanson Explorers, which gave the children something to hang on to. It gave the staff something as well to say to them, look, explorers take risks, explorers explore, you know, they find things out. And that's the thing that underpins all of our events, activities, curriculum, whatever we do at this school. It's all about trying to pull it back to the vision of being an explorer. And I think that's really helped, because it's what it's done is it's given us something to relate to, it's given us something to believe in. The children are very proud of their badge, they're very proud of being here. I think part of that's the PE influence. I'm PE main, that's my background, and it's about being proud of your kit, your team. And then within that there are smaller families, so we've introduced houses as well, which has helped children mix, because we're such a large school. Many of the year sixes didn't really know anybody else lower down the school, so we've put them into different houses, so they're not only are they an explorer, they're now in a house, which helps them actually mix with younger children and for younger children to have identifiable role models. And then I think one of the other things what we've done is with the parents is we've given them a voice, so we've said it's not just about the school doing everything. I've gone out again and done this whole team approach to the child with the parents, and saying to the parents, you know, without their help, we cannot achieve all these things we want to for your children. And the parents have jumped on board with that. They've been really, really positive. They've really taken to us opening the door and saying, come into school, come and see what we're doing. We've got nothing to hide. We want you in. They'll come for assemblies, they come for productions and performances. They also turn up to parents' evenings and to workshops to support their child.
Excellent. What about the staff that were here before? Was there a high turnover, or did you manage to take many of them with you?
We've taken a number of staff with us, which has been fantastic. There were obviously some that went. There were some that went very early on that I never met. Then there's been some that have moved on since I've arrived. That always happens in schools. We've had quite a few actually have gone on to promotions as well from here in a short space of time. What I've hoped I've been able to do is, I've definitely seen a change in the school, is that the doors are all propped open now. I think previously what used to happen here was that the good staff, and there were good staff and there are good staff here, some fantastic people, what they'd done was they knew what they believed in as a teacher and they closed the door and they got on with it. What we're now doing is they're opening the door and they want to share it with, not only with me, but with their colleagues and with any visitors. And I think that's what's really helped. We've got some strategically across the school, we've put in some really, really strong experienced practitioners, and they're helping to mould the less experienced members of staff, and they're carrying the vision across such a large school, because obviously I can't be in every room every day with my mantra. I've got to delegate and I've got to make sure that other people are leading on the vision. One of the things that we have developed and has developed since I've been here is the leadership team. They are absolutely pivotal in all of this, and basically at one of these really we should be interviewing them rather than me. I'm a true believer in delegating, I'm a true believer in teamwork, and they have risen to the challenge. They know that if they make a mistake, it's not, we can sort it, we come up with solutions. They also know that they can run ideas past me, that they have an honest forum where we can talk about what we're going to do next or how we do things. And they also know that I trust them. So when they're out there delivering, they know that they have my full backing. And I think that's one of the best things to have come out of all of this.
And I think we must, probably not now, well, maybe if we get time at the end of the discussion here, talk about how Revolve helped here at the school, because I know we've got a few health mentors working
yes.
with you, so we'll maybe come back and pick up on that. But also wanted to talk about the Core Trust, because you're also part of the Core Trust. You've got Rockwood School over the road here, so how's that going?
That's been a really good thing that's come out of the whole situation that both schools found themselves in. It was set up as a local solution, obviously in many difficult cases within schools, that they look for sponsors and that the trust is broken up. And but in this case, Rockwood and Nansen stayed together, and Core Trust was set up in the wake of the whole Trojan Horse affair. And what it really is, it's about local leaders coming together, local people within the community of Birmingham to help develop the two schools. And what's been really good is that upon part of our directors and within Core, we've been able to establish partnerships with the Birmingham Rep, with the local football clubs, with many things that are going on within Birmingham, and also within the area of Alum Rock. So what we're saying to the community is that this is your school, this is, and you need to help us within, you know, to further and develop the children. And that's been a really positive side of what's happened. And also the nice thing about being within a small MAC that's starting is that I've been there since sort of almost day one, and I'm able to help shape what the future of this MAC's going to be. It is going to expand. It was always part of what was set out. And ultimately, we will have more schools that will be part of Core Trust. But the really good thing about the Core Trust values and the things that attracted me to it was that they're really the same values that I would have. So it's not as though I've had to change my approach. It's very much based on creativity. It's very much based on the whole child. It's very much the belief that happy children who are enjoying school will ultimately do well in English and maths. And that's something that I've subscribed to all my leadership life. So to actually find a trust that had set that all up without me having to set up a trust was actually really quite a bonus, I think.
Saves you a lot of time as well.
Yes, absolutely. Saves me a lot of time. But it's like having your own little mini local authority. That's what I tell people. It's like I can pick up the phone up people and say, what about this? Have we got one of these? And the nice thing is that if I come up with an idea and we haven't got something like that, I can set that up because we're so new.
Great. And along similar lines, I know Birmingham as an authority has had a tough time recently. Birmingham schools have come together to form the Birmingham Education Partnership. I know you've been heavily involved in that as well. So I just want to give us a summary of the work of the BEP.
Yeah, I think the BEP came together when, as head teachers, we were sort of talking about, well, what can we do? I remember being one of those first meetings, and it was about, as head teachers, if we band together, we are a much stronger voice. And that the thing we have in common is that we're all teaching Birmingham children. So that's kind of what the basis was that it started under, and the fact that the local authority, which has always been incredibly strong in Birmingham, by this time has been cut and cut and cut. And it's knowing, in the beginning, it was knowing who to go to for things, and then also it's developed from there into doing school-to-school support. It's developed into helping schools that are going through turbulent times or difficult times. And there's an acknowledgement, I think, from every single school, whether you're outstanding, good, requires improvement or in special measures, that during the lifetime of a school, you'll all have a bad patch. That's what happens. You'll all have a fabulously good patch, and you'll all have something that will be a challenge. And the good thing about the BEP is that it's brought together so much experience that you could never have tapped into, I don't think. And I think the good thing for me, I think, is within that is that we're able to either still able to pick up the phone and phone those heads that you always phone when you're in a bit of a, you need some advice or you need a question answering. But also it's brought on board many of the schools in Birmingham that perhaps were not yet in the network. Perhaps not like me, could phone somebody up and ask the answer. And the buy-in from the primary schools has been absolutely stunning. So there's nearly all of the primary schools are now part of the BEP. So to get all of those head teachers together under one umbrella is a major positive.
I know when I started working here, it was under the
direction and leadership of Tim Brigace. And it's interesting, some of the head teachers I worked with early on were such big fans, and I think it's important that the strength of unity and the collaboration there that maybe started then or even before Tim is maintained, because I think there was a danger of losing that.
I think so. I mean, when I was a deputy head in Sandwell, we came over to hear Tim Brighouse speak. That's how the draw he had. And I think that those that worked with him know that keeping the fact that all the children of Birmingham are important, I think that's one of his the crux of everything he did, and that the belief that every school has some outstanding practice, no matter who you are and where you are, comes from him. So, and I think that's what we're building on. We've built on the. It's almost like with head teachers. Sometimes you have to leave your ego at the door and realise that you're there. You're in it now for the good of not just your school, but the school next door, or the school up the road, or the school 5 miles away. And I think that's really, really worked here. And heads appreciate sharing good practice between each other, but also can help shape other things that they've started doing these peer reviews now between schools, and actually to have other colleagues, leadership colleagues, coming into your school can, to some people, might seem quite daunting, but actually you get far more from it in your feedback, because they understand the situation you're in, rather than just being a complete outsider. They live the same situation you do, and actually I think that helps with them being able to plan your strategies within your developments, and to actually look forward and say, okay, I can do this, we can do this, and I've got other colleagues who can point me in different directions of other schools that have succeeded. I think it's worked well. It came at exactly the right time, I think, the BEP did. And what the other thing was, I was always very keen, was that just because you join the BEP doesn't mean you cannot have other networks. So the development of your networks, you can have as many networks as you like, I think, as long as they have an impact on your school. So if you're in 27 networks and it's working for you, that's absolutely fine. If you're in 2 and it's working for you, that's absolutely fine.
And you mentioned there, Kath, that you're a deputy over in Sandwell.
Mm.
So what school was that?
Albion Junior School. Opposite West Bromwich Albion's ground.
Now you're not West Brom fan, unfortunately.
No, I'm not. So I started life there at Albion Junior School as an NQT. Well, I was a probationary teacher then. And then I got a point. There were points then. Got a point because we had a minibus. So you don't get those anymore, do you? It's
like, so the school got a minibus and you got a point?
And I got a point, yeah. Well, I was also doing... I did some PE as well, so definitely it was for PE, but we used to joke that it was for the minibus.
Okay.
And I was in charge of the minibus and the PE. And I then... I then covered... a colleague was off sick after operation, and I covered the maths role. And... from there, I then got the role permanently for maths. So I did maths and PE. And then I got an opportunity to apply for the acting deputy's job at Albion Junior School. And whilst there were some far more experienced people who had applied for it as well, I'll never forget that the reason they said that I got the job was I was the only one who said I'd like to be a head teacher. Okay. So I got the acting role there, and then I got a permanent deputy's job at Holy Trinity Primary School, which was round the corner from Albion Junior School, still in West Bromwich. I went there and did 6.5 years there, which was a very different school, because whilst it said it was Church of England, it was an incredibly mixed congregation, and we had to balance so many different cultures and religions. While at the same time still staying true to the vision of the school as a Church of England school. But there I very much did an awful lot on PE, but I also did maths. I was the Senko. I was the deputy head that then gave up my office. This was all before PPA and management time. And I taught a class of 42 then. So I kind of felt that I earned my stripes, to be honest.
Yeah,
just a bit. But I remember getting the first laptop, myself and the ICT coordinator, got the very first two laptops that came into school. It's part of a kind of trial thing, and it just revolutionised my life. I think a laptop did. And then from there, I always thought I'd get a headship in Sandwell. That was my plan. But I applied to Benson Community School because it was literally next door to West Brom. And I used to always think I'd get a headship in West Bromwich and somewhere around there. And I didn't expect to get offered the job, to be honest. I was going to an interview a week later, and I thought I'd get the one a week later. And I got offered the job, which was a bit like, oh, right, OK, well, I can do this. And then in the true way of headship, you have a term and a half to think about it before you start. And the number of times I kept thinking, I can't do this, can't be on my own. Because I liked being a deputy, because you had a foot in both camps. You were a leader and a senior leader, and you could have days when you were in charge, but also you knew the gossip in the staff room. And I wasn't sure whether I was ready to cross the line, become the head teacher. But I did it, and I didn't look back from there. I loved every minute of it.
Now, I know some of the backstory here from my time as a governor at Benson, but it was difficult to start, wasn't it?
It was very difficult, yes. Yeah. I think you don't know a place until you're actually able to kind of root through the cupboards and things. So I inherited a deficit budget, which grew and grew. And it was a school with falling numbers as well. And again, I was the sixth head teacher in 7 years. So I kind of remember the first, I had a parents' meeting probably about a week and a half in, about 2 weeks in. And this parent in the front row said, well, how do we know you're going to do this? You know, we don't believe you. And I just remember thinking, I haven't been here very long. And I just said, give me a term. I remember saying that, give me a term. And then walking out going, oh my gosh, I've got so much to do in a term. But I think I stabilised the ship there, really. And we got, again, this belief that we should be proud of who we were. We then introduced there, we were Benson Bees. And it was being a family and being that we were all on the same side. I remember saying that to a number of parents who used to come. You could hear them yelling down the corridor as they're coming to see you. And once we established that we actually were on the same side, that changed a lot of the culture at the school, that I wasn't there to stop them getting involved with their children, or that we had to work together for their child. And that I think that the best bits about it was that even when their child had done something wrong, we saw some challenging behaviours at Benson, that I was always fair, and when their child did something, the right things, I would be the first one to be congratulating, to phone home, to say how well they'd done, and that I would always try and find a solution, even in the darkest moments with some of the behaviour with the children. And I think that's what the parents began to respect and admire in me, was that I wouldn't give up on anybody. Within that, though, we did discover that at Benson we were very, very good at sport. And that's how we became a confident school, in the fact that we could take us on in anything and we would somehow come back with some kind of trophy. Mm. So that was good.
I must admit, that's one of the things that drew me to the school when I was asked to join as a governor.
Yeah. I think the other thing, and that's where Benson, we used the Evolve Mentors, and we did a bit of trial and error with some of them. And it was actually, what happened was, it allowed us to, that a child didn't disrupt the entire lesson. And that's what had happened before. You'd have something would go on in the classroom, and these are children who face some huge social challenges at home, in their day-to-day life, and that they came to school and the school became the safe haven. That's what it was. And actually, they were allowed to be upset first thing in the morning, and we discovered if they'd not had any breakfast or they'd had very little sleep. And we used to use the mentors then to almost like breakfast on the move, it was. They were going around classrooms and finding out who hadn't eaten, and then going back again with a bowl of cornflakes. And they said, so they did everything, so they did a lot of social, almost like social work, really. But what was great was that these were some other people, these were young people that the children could have really positive relationships with, and actually realised that, gosh, I could do that. You know, I like sport. I could do that. I could be in a school. I could do that as a job. And I think actually being able to have really positive relationships with the children that were not the teachers. And I think that we managed to do that really, really well, I think. And it was just... The great thing about Benson was that every day was different. We kept a sense of humour. And gosh, we've laughed at Benson sometimes about things, and that's with the children and with the staff. But also that you knew that you made a huge difference. You made a huge impact on those children's lives, just on a day-to-day basis. And just by talking to them or acknowledging them, I realised that just me saying one line to a child from the head teacher makes a huge difference to their day. And so to make sure that I either was able to touch base with some of my most hardest to reach children or the very quiet children, that, you know, and just watching them smile and walk a little bit taller just because they'd spoken to Mrs. Rindle, just makes you realise how much you can impact on children's lives.
And you've already, just in the conversation so far, you've dropped lots of tips and advice for aspiring head teachers or people who are moving into a leadership role, let's say maybe in September. But if you were, and you've done a lot of work supporting head teacher colleagues previously, so what advice would you give to head teachers who have taken up a new position in September?
Don't panic. there's only so many lists you can make, I'll tell you that, because actually you end up spending your entire day making a list. I would say listen, definitely listen. And my most, I suppose the best thing that's always said to me, always trust your gut instinct. So whether that's about a child protection issue or whether it's about, shall I spend this money on, I don't know, this new resource, or whether it's, shall we do this, or whether we don't, I've always gone on what I think is the right thing and keep hold of that bit. And so that's, keep hold of your vision, so don't ever lose. So for me, it's always been that the children are at the heart of everything that we do, and that I want it to be a creative, exciting experience for them. So even when we have to do, I don't know, SATs revision, we're still doing it in a way that is, it's fun, and we smile, and we can do it in different ways so that it's not just rote learning day after day after day. And I think my advice then would be is to treasure, within as a new head, treasure the times you can spend with the children, because if you're not careful, you can end up stuck in your office. So make a point of every day talking to children, because it keeps you grounded, also helps you find out what the gossip is around the school. But also the children want to talk to you. So I often at lunchtime or first thing in the morning go and position myself in a good area where I know I'll see lots and lots of children, and they'll just come up and they tell me things and talk to me. So I find that keeps you grounded, I think. It makes you remember why you're here.
And do you miss teaching?
Yes, although I worry now I wouldn't be able to do all the planning. Yes, I do. I miss teaching. I love times when I'm with all the children. I keep saying I'm going to go and do a class of this, class of that, and sometimes I can pull it off and sometimes I can't. It's being in the same place at the same time. But I think the most important thing about it is being able to say, well, I can do this and this will make the biggest impact. I did a PE lesson here at Nansen a couple of weeks ago with year six, and the look of shock that I knew what I was talking about was quite good. But we had half an hour and we played some silly games, and then we played crab football because I had the smallest space available, and I thought, well, I've got one ball, what am I going to do? So we played crab football, and these children came and asked, can we now have a club for crab football? And you're just thinking, I played it once. So I think, I do miss teaching. I'd love to go back in. I was always year six, you see, year five and year six. I liked older children. So I think ultimately I'll end up back there, probably.
I know I used to sit on lots of recruitment panels with you as well for teachers. And what do you think are some of the common mistakes that, say, newer teachers are making with their class? And things that you have to support them with in your role or delegate down to your deputies?
I think new teachers, so new to the profession, and I know why they do, but I think they spend too long planning and too long on that side of teaching instead of just teaching, instead of learning the craft by doing it. And I know that sometimes that's quite easy to say, I've got to hand in my planning and I've got to this. What we've done here is there were two phases of this school. There was special measures phase and there is Nanson as a primary school phase now. And what we've done is we've made sure we've got the medium term plans are all there, the staff have all contributed to them so they are bespoke to our school. Then as a teacher, how you then plan your English and your maths is down to you. So if that's on a piece of paper and it's written and you've just put some highlighted notes and things, that's absolutely fine. If it's printed out and you keep it on your computer, that's absolutely fine. If it's a series of PowerPoints, that's absolutely fine. The most important thing is the delivery. And I think that's the bit I'm trying to say to especially my NQTs and NQTs plus one, is get the delivery right. All the other paperwork side of things, that will all settle down. It'll all sort itself out. And actually, if you get the delivery right, you get the results. So what you wrote down in the first place, nobody will look at, nobody minds about. And it's the same about marking. We've changed the marking policy here, and we've called it feedback, first of all. I think that's a big shift, so that it doesn't have to be marking. So, which then means, as a teacher, you don't have to make a mark in their book. So you're allowing the staff. I'm saying from the top that I'm not going to be looking for how many red pens there are or how many, we're marking green here, but how many teacher comments there are. We're looking at the different types of feedback that's given. So whether it's verbal feedback or whether it's peer-to-peer with the children marking each other's, I want to see that in their books. And if you write something as the teacher, by gosh, it's going to move the learning on. So and what I'm hoping is that gives the staff time back, because I think I don't want my under 28s to all be completely exhausted and to give up teaching, because that's what I'm trying to do, is stop that in my own little way here at Nanson. Stop the resignation of younger staff.
It's interesting how many people through this podcast series have said the same things, all independently, and the point on feedback is an interesting one, because I'm meeting with Jeremy at Three Bridges School in Ealing in a few weeks to have a conversation with him, because he made the headlines in The Guardian because he scraps written feedback, and not feedback, but marking, and similar to your approach there.
And I think the other thing, that what being a good being judged good by Ofsted means, that you've got time to do things. So I've been in schools and here where everything's incredibly reactive, and that's fine, because that's the situation you're in, but that's not sustainable. It isn't sustainable. And as a head teacher, you burn yourself out. You can't do it. So you have to look at embedding really good practices that the school is then built on. And part of this, I mean, we've scrapped now the word assessment weeks. You know, they're evidence gathering weeks. You know that. So we still have a week, and we still say we've got to get everything done in that week. But we're saying it's about evidence, so we're not putting everything onto a test. And I think some of the bigger changes have got to come from the head teacher. They've got to come from the senior leadership team. And it's no good me just standing up there, like I said before, just saying this is what we're going to do. And then when I do a book scrutiny, going, well, you've not done enough feedback in here. I've got to actually, my actions have got to match my words. And I think that's one of the things that now we're getting embedded here at Nanson, is that the staff have seen us do book scrutinies where we haven't come back and said, there's not enough marking, there's not enough. This is, and we've actually used as examples to show the rest of the staff, the people who've got verbal feedback sorted and who've got limited amount of marking in their books. And actually, that's the other side of it, is about who you're doing it for. That's one of the things, actually, going back to, for new head teachers, keep saying, who am I doing it for? Because if you're just doing it for Ofsted, is that really why you should do stuff? You should be doing things because it's the right things for the children in your school at that particular time.
And you talked about the teacher recruitment crisis we have, which is fueled by retention and number of people leaving the profession. But how do you think we could market the role, the position of a teacher more effectively? What do you think we could be doing to try and raise the profile of the profession?
I think probably if you wanted to apply for a job here at Nanson, we let you talk to our NQTs who are already in it, so you can hear it warts and all. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to acknowledge the fact that especially NQTs will think they have to work Friday night, Saturday and all day Sunday, and you've got to show them that there's a way of balancing all that. I think you have to, I've always said to the NQTs when they start here, their NQT year will be their worst year of their life, because it is, but then after that it does get an awful lot better. And you'd be able to actually spend, you'd be able to work out within your weekend or your time away from school or your holidays what needs to be done and prioritise things much better rather than just panicking and doing everything. But I think generally for teachers, I think we need to raise the importance of a teacher, because it's the one thing everybody in this country and across the world has in common. We all have somebody, a teacher, who will have inspired us at some stage, and I don't think we encapsulate that in the adverts that are there. So whilst there is an advert and it's beginning to start to show, you could influence this child in future years, I think we need to sing about that and shout about that much more and acknowledge the huge importance that being a teacher really does have on children's lives. And I know that sounds a bit sort of... sounds very simple, doesn't it? But it's not. I know it isn't. And there's all those things about, we should attract people to Birmingham, for example, because we're the second city and a bit cheaper to live here than London, and you could do all of that bit and get people to come here. But I think everywhere across the country, it doesn't matter whether you're in a city or whether you're out in the countryside, that people are struggling for teachers. I think it's about bigging up the job as an opportunity at universities, is getting to universities and talk to people before they make a decision about a career. I've been a couple of times and spoken at Newman University to their third years on their teacher training course, and it's just been great to tell them what it's really like in school, but to tell them all the funny stories as well, and say, it's just, I suppose, in the way it's going out there and getting people to realise it's the best job in the world. Because it's amazing how many children in this school at the moment, if you go and ask them, they either want to be on X Factor, they want to be, lots of them want to be accountants or lawyers. I think that comes a little bit from their families. But a lot of them want to be teachers. And where does that go? What changes from being 9 and wanting to be a teacher until getting to 21, 22, 23, and you don't want to be a teacher anymore? We need to look at that bit, I think.
Well, I've just interviewed Paul Green from Ling Hall School in Coventry. He's got a fantastic way of retaxing secondary school.
Yeah.
And they've got a scheme whereby they invite a lot of their students back from university during school holiday periods to work with children. And he pays towards some of their costs as well, so that it's a way of keeping that enthusiasm going. So his next pipeline of teachers are coming from his former students.
Yeah. I think the way of keeping them, once they're in your school, then you identify them. I do a lot of, I like talent spot amongst my staff, and so I know different people and I like to know what their talents are, but also what their own career aspirations are. And then one of the things I've always done, I did it at Benson and I'm putting it into place here at Nanson, is to keep staff and devise roles to keep them, or ensure that there is a good opportunity for people to progress through the school, because you often lose staff because they go, because you can't give them a TLR or you can't give them the next step up. And I think you need to always be mindful of how you can help them in their career. So being part of a network and being part of a MAT, I think it's going to allow me greater freedom with that, and being able to say, okay, I don't want to lose, I might lose you at Nansen, but there is a job in our other schools which keeps you within our academy chain then. Which I think, well, I'm thinking we need to be, and sometimes I think perhaps we're too nice as well. I think we need to say, actually, well, I want to keep you, so what have I got to do to keep you? And the other side of things is, one of the things is, that worked really well at Benson was to look after the well-being of staff. And we were doing well-being way before it became like this new buzzword of mental health and things. And one of the things that we did there was every Friday we had you could a sign-up sheet where you could sign up for either a massage or a facial or pedicure and manicure and things like that. And every member of staff was allowed to have a half an hour slot over the, I think we did it over the half term, so it meant everybody got a slot. Some people took it up, and a lot of people, there was no compulsory nature to it, it was if you wanted to do it. But we also did a training day that was completely about well-being. We did yoga, salsa dancing, and then there was a bit on what makes you stressed and how you can cope with that. And the number of texts I got that night from people saying, thank you so much, it was really, you know, worth, it was probably the most worthwhile inset they'd been on, which worries you a bit about your English and maths inset, doesn't it? But and I think it's about doing stuff like that. It's about remembering that your staff are human beings and that they've got families or they've got commitments outside of school, and that just like your children can come in stressed or worried about something, your teachers can come in stressed and worried. And I think sometimes you can't help it, but there's so many other things going on that sometimes that bit slips. And I think you've got to know your staff, you've got to know what makes them tick and what kind of things do, what works with Mr. So-and-so, does that work with Mrs. thing over here, and actually knowing, for them to know that your door's always open and that you're available, but without pushing it so much to people. So there's a definite balance.
I've got one more question before we change the mood slightly. We often get bump into each other at conferences and events, and I know for a number of years I was there at the exhibiting and talking to colleagues at the Birmingham Birmingham Leaders Conference. Mm-hmm. So, can you remember any standout presentations, or is there anything like maybe on YouTube you've seen that has inspired you, or something that springs to mind?
Yeah, there was. I've seen lots of people, and I always like taking a little thing from something. And I used to quite like it. So I did a consultant leadership course at National College. And I remember them going on and on about different people's theories and things. And I used to think, oh, I do that. And I didn't know that was an actual theory out there. But the one that's probably stood in my mind that sort of helped change things or put things into perspective, but I saw Paul McGee, who's known affectionately as the sumo guy. And the best bit about his was that everybody appears at your door, or every event happens, and you're in as a leader, and you judge it on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being death. And actually, what that makes you do is you kind of stand there, and people bring you things, and you think, that's only like a 1 or a 2, so I don't need to get stressed about it or worried about it or have to jump up out of my seat to do something about it. And I think that sort of mantra, you know, that sort of says, is this a question of, is it so serious? Is this a 9 or a 10? Well, if it's a 9 or a 10, then we need everybody, and it's you know, it really does need a huge response to. But actually, most things you deal with on a day-to-day basis are like a 1, a 2, or a 3, and they're not then insurmountable. You can do it. And that built on to a little management book that I had, which the name of the book, it was Ken Blanchard, and he did the 1-Minute Managers, which was quite a long time ago, and he did one about a monkey on your back, and that staff appear at your door and they have this monkey that's on their back, and what they're trying to do is give you the monkey, and then they walk away and they're fine and they're happy, and you've got all their problems, which is this monkey. And it might be you've suddenly found yourself as the head teacher volunteering to run X, Y, and Z, and actually that's not what you set out to do. So I think that those two things have probably held me in the best way to what you do with the monkeys. You give it back to them. So your questions about, so what are you going to do, rather than what have I got to do about it? And that's helped me with delegating things, because I'm the kind of person who sometimes does find it difficult to say no to things.
Well, I'll put some of those links on the website so people can look them up and do some of their own research. When you're not skiing, what else can you do to switch off?
Well, I used to play hockey, and I played hockey to a high level, so it's about five years now, I think, since I've stopped playing league hockey and stuff. And that used to be the way, because I used to, on a Saturday, I would get to the game. Nobody cared what had happened in my week, as long as I defended and did my bit for Edgbaston Hockey Club. Now, I go to the gym, because I have to go and do something active. And again, when I do that, that means that I'm not worrying. Or if I am thinking about it, I'm actually able to sort it out, if you see what I mean. I like to stay busy at the weekends, which I suppose seems shame, because I don't want to waste a minute. I kind of almost a bit like that sometimes. I think because I've spent such a long time at work during the week, that I want to cram a lot of things into the weekend. Got some really, really good friends who allow me either to moan as we're walking around the shops about life and school and stuff, or are able to, we get out and we get out to the countryside, just fresh air, I think. I'm much better in the summer, because I like the sunshine, I think. But staying active and spending time with my family. My boys have grown up only ever knowing that their mum was a head teacher, and hopefully I've not put them off education. I don't think.
And you mentioned your friends there. Do you have many friends that aren't teachers or aren't in education?
Yeah. Because obviously playing hockey. My husband and I both played hockey. That's how we met, and all that brings a lot of different people from many different walks of life, and. We've got quite a large group of friends, and yes, I'm the only head teacher. Got another friend who's a teacher, but apart from that, they're whole different walks of life. And the nice thing about that is we can talk about the leadership types of things, and they're very transferable skills. And it's interesting that those that are in sort of so now company directors and things like that, they're always asking me about how do you motivate your staff, and how do you get things done with such a tight budget and things like that. And I'm always going to them and asking them about the commercial side of things, and how can I make my money stretch further. I think it's really good to, because as a head teacher, I think you need to know a lot about a lot of things. So I've always been very, very good at things like Trivial Pursuit, because I know a lot about a lot of things. And it's choosing which things then you get to know deeply, if you see what I mean, and go into them in more depth. And I think that's sometimes what you're able to do with friends who are not in education, because you can then actually have conversations with them about world politics, for example, or what's going to happen in the future, and what's worked for you, and those kind of things. So, friends are very, very. I think friends are very, very important. I think they keep you grounded, keep you level-headed.
And when you're having those conversations with friends, and they're talking about the challenges that they're facing, do you often think that you'd swap places?
No. I didn't want to say, I envied somebody who was getting sent around the world, but it all seemed great the first 2 weeks he did it, and now I think he's really would much rather work in Birmingham. No, I've never not wanted. This is always what I always wanted to be. apart from this, I'll play for Manchester United, but I knew that I was a girl, so it wasn't going to happen. I always wanted to be a head teacher. So when I went into teaching to be a head teacher, that was, I always wanted my own school. I did always imagine, though, that there's a field that I walked past, or an area green in the Lake District. And I used to joke when we used to go to the Lake District on holiday that that was where my school was going to be. I was going to build it there. So I've missed out a bit there. Because I've stayed in inner city, but I always felt that I should be in an inner city school. I've never felt that I should be anywhere else other than the inner city.
Okay, here's a quick question for you: TV or books?
Probably TV, but more of a box set type person I am.
Okay, what's your favourite box set?
The West Wing is my favourite all time ever. And then I'm much more of a Grey's Anatomy type. I like a good hospital drama. I'm not sure why I like a good hospital drama. But yeah, anything sort of like House of Cards as well.
House of Cards is a good one.
Yeah.
And in the way of music, what music? Is it theatre?
No. Music. I'm a big 80s girl. My boys grew up singing to 80s classics in the car, so I'm a big sort of Simple Minds, I suppose U2, kind of anything that allows you to sing out loud to, I think. My youngest could sing to Tainted Love by Soft Sal. It's one of the first songs he ever sang. I've apologised on a number of occasions that I've corrupted his own music career, musical influences, but yeah, anything sort of loud and almost can G you up. I've got a number of songs that I sometimes play if I know Ofsted have come to school. So I'm coming to school.
Now, because most of the guests on this podcast series, they're not currently working with Evolve, they're health mentors at the school, but I know that you're one of the first. Well, actually, it's interesting how you took health mentors at Benson School, because one of the first conditions, I guess, for me being a governor, working alongside yourself and Sue there, was I didn't really want to have that pecuniary interest, but we quickly got some health mentors in at Benson. But what would you say, if as a head teacher listening, you wanted to know what a health mentor does for your school, how would you try and sum that up in a sentence or two?
They're like teaching assistants, but with wings, we've always said. So they're able, they're able to target children who are finding it really, really difficult to either stay in the classroom or to concentrate in the classroom. So, here it's a bit like we have like a hit squad, and they go into the rooms and make sure that those children who need some adult intervention just to get them started or get them on the task, or stay on the task, not started, but to stay on the task, and who are, if they're left, they become more and more disruptive. And to stop that line of children that appear either outside the head teacher's door or the pastoral room or wherever. So they go in, they fix things really quickly, and then they come back out again to classrooms. They're also able to do actual intervention with the children, which are much more practical. The children here fight each other. Well, they don't fight each other, that's wrong. They desperately want to be in Tagtivate, which is a way of doing either phonics or spelling or times tables, but running around and chasing each other. And they love it. They absolutely love it. And so the health mentors run those interventions for the children. But also the health mentor is then seen around school. So they've got this fantastic role in school where they're not a teacher, they're not a teaching assistant, they're this person who's walking around school, who's available if you need them, for whatever it is you need them. It's almost as about that they can solve just about everything. But at the same time, they're running a football competition, or they're getting the children active and doing something. And I think they know so many of the children, that the children trust them, and I think that's just huge. And what it's done is it means that children have got somebody else to talk to, that somebody that they trust, that will come and support them, will shout from the highest rooftops when they do the right things and things. But what we found is it's brought a calm. It's definitely brought a calm to Benson, and it's now brought a calm to Nansen, where I think children previously would have not known how to cope with the situation, know that there's somebody else, as well as their teacher, but somebody who really knows them, who they can go and talk to and get something sorted out.
I think that when we first set the programme up, we realised that a lot of children just weren't accessing learning.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think the times have changed since, I don't know, when teaching systems first came on the scene, and I think society needs something a little bit different now with the challenges that children have. But you won an award at our conference.
I did, yes.
Presented by the Director of Public Health here in Birmingham for innovation, because when we first had a health mentor in a school full-time, 5 days a week, we thought that was a big achievement, and we had a number of schools that took more than one health mentor, but you were the first head teacher in the country to really grasp the nettle and see what could be possible if you really committed and got behind the project. So at Benson, I know we were up to 4 at one point, and now you've got number here.
Yeah, we had 7 here. That's the most we've had. And actually, I think it's a good thing we've now got 4 here, because we need 7, because it was part of the whole reactive and to actually make a really large impact in a very short space of time, we needed 7. And we did that. So we had 1 in each year group. And it really worked. And now what I've got is that they have 2 year groups each. But they are definitely part of our school. And so they meet with the pastoral... They're part of the pastoral manager's team. He line manages them, helps that he used to be an involved mentor. Mm-hmm. So he truly does understand what the things they've got to do. They get a weekly meeting from their area manager. And, I mean, they've done all sorts. They've been on residentials with us here at Nansen. They've sorted out external competitions for us when we first were trying to get back out there. That one of them has set up links with a secondary school and to be part of their sports programme. The things that they've then... And I think the other thing is what also been good is that they've then encouraged other members of staff to do things. They've also run a staff club after school, and we're currently doing rounders now. That's the newest one that's out there. And I think that's great, because what it's doing is bringing people together. They can do everything from one-to-one to almost running the entire class. That's the thing is, and I think that the amount of flexibility that they've got is just unbelievable. You know, by gum, they work hard, I have to say.
Now, I'm conscious of time, and we're almost at the end here, but you're certainly a long way off retirement, so don't even start thinking about that one. But when that day comes, how would you like to be remembered by colleagues who you've worked with in the past?
I'd hope that there will be people who become head teachers because of Kath Rindall. So I inspired them to to stay in education or to come and become a teacher. I'd hope that they hold some really fond memories of their time at primary school, and that those things that they remember are not 6 tests they had to do, that they're the fun, exciting, challenging things that they did in primary school, and that they're prepared to take a bit of a risk when they're out there in the big bad world. And if they can do that, then I think I will have done well. I'm trying very hard to convert this side of Alan Rock into a Manchester United fan base, but I'm failing miserably, so I won't worry about that. If I've inspired any of them to become teachers, I think that then I will have done a good job.
Well, Kath, it's been a pleasure. I always enjoy our conversations. I'm just really pleased you managed to record this one.
No, you're welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.